This is to our speaker, Megan from Port Fishington down in Philly.
Hi, my name is Megan and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank the group for asking me to come out here. I've been to this group a handful of times, but I don't think I've ever been able to be here when you guys have your meeting outside, so this is pretty cool. I don't know of any other meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that are able to have their meeting outside, especially in Philly. We have, like, very little outdoor space, but so it's really, I don't know, I think this is a really cool thing. My sobriety date is July 12th, 2004, and my home group, like Jeff said, is the Port Fishington speaker meeting. We meet Monday nights, 7:30. The reason why it's called Port Fishington, I feel like every time I speak outside of the city, I have to explain this because it sounds really silly, but it's because it's like around the neighborhoods. I just heard somebody say, yeah, Port Richmond, Fishtown, Kensington. So we called it Port Fishington. And it's really cool because when I got sober, and I say this almost every time I speak, particularly at hour-long speaker meetings, and I haven't been corrected since, so I think I may be right. But when I got sober, there were no hour-long speaker meetings in Philadelphia, to my knowledge. And there was a group of people at my home group at the time, the last stop, who were going to, like, they would, like, pack their cars, and we would go to York, Pennsylvania, and Newark, Delaware, and, like, I think we'd even, like, come here if this meeting was in existence then. I don't remember. But we would travel to these hour-long speaker meetings, and, you know, road trips were a big part of my early sobriety and still a big part of my sobriety today. And then that same group of people got the idea to have that format in Philadelphia. And since then, a lot of meetings in the Philadelphia area have adopted that format, and it's been really cool to see. I personally like the format. Not really to speak at. Speaking's not, like, my favorite thing to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, I like it. And I'm just going to tell you guys what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And I feel, like, exceptionally nervous tonight for some reason. So, but I'm, you know, I always start off before I even pick up a drink, because for me that was relevant. I grew up in Northeast Philadelphia. I've actually never lived outside of Philadelphia, and I grew up in, like, it was, like, really nice family in, like, a pretty decent area. I have, you know, two parents who are still together today. We were talking about that on the ride up, how I feel like that's not a common thing. To paint a picture of the family I come from, my mom worked two jobs when I got to high school so that my brother and I can get a Catholic school education. And my dad quit his own plumbing business to get a job at a local college so my brother and I can go to college, like, tuition free. Like, that's the family I come from. I don't know any other alcoholics in my family. I don't have any, like, horror stories. Like, I don't have anything to point to and say, like, this is why I drank. And I thought, like, I know today, like, you don't, like, need that. Like, that's not my experience. And I know that is a lot of people's experience. But the first time I went to rehab when I was 19, and this is just my perception, so I could be wrong, but it seemed like I heard a lot of people talk about broken homes and alcoholism in their families and, like, child abuse. And I would, like, disqualify myself. I would think, well, you know, I must not be an alcoholic because I don't have, like, a reason to drink. And, like, I know today, like, after, like, learning about what alcoholism is, like, I don't need a reason, you know, like, the doctor's opinion says, like, you know, I love the effect produced by alcohol, you know, like, it's as simple as that. Like, I wasn't running from anything. Like, I don't even know if it was, like, genetic. Like, I just love how alcohol made me feel. But, you know, so I had this pretty good childhood, and, you know, I you know, I even liked going to school, you know, like I love the neighborhood I grew up in, like all that. And the earliest I remember that changing was when I was about 12 years old. My family decided to move to like a better neighborhood. And, you know, and at that time, like, it was like, I would have told you that's the worst thing to ever happen. Like, you know, cause I had to leave my friends in the neighborhood. I had to leave like the school I was at and start this new school. And it was around that time that I started to be really uncomfortable in my own skin. Like I started to not like who I was and I started, you know, just to be really worried about what other people think. And, you know, to the point where when we had moved, the new house that we lived in was right across the street from the new school that I was going to. And I would, like, if I don't remember the specific time, but if the bell rang at 8 for classes to start, like, I left my parents' house at, like, 7:58 a.m. because I didn't want to stand in the schoolyard with the other kids. Like, that's just the extent to how, like, different I felt. You know, and it wasn't, you know, I didn't always feel that growing up. And, like, I felt like I was the new kid up until, like, high school, basically. And, you know, when I was about 14 years old, maybe 13, that's when I got drunk for the first time. And at this point, like, I think I had drank before, but, like, this time, like, was the first time I'd, like, gotten that full effect from alcohol. And I had a sleepover, and we were in the basement of my parents' house. My parents had, at the time, they had this, like, bar with a bunch of different kinds of liquor. And that night, you know, I don't even think I'd planned it. My friends that stayed over, they didn't drink that night. Like, I just, it was as simple as I wanted to know what it felt like to be drunk. Like, I was just curious. I wanted to know what it felt like. And I took a bottle of Seagram 7, and I took some shots, and I got drunk that night. And, like, I don't even know what to say about it. I fell in love with alcohol the first time I ever got drunk. I wanted to feel that way as much as I could all the time. I couldn't understand why people were not drunk 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Like, I loved it. And, you know, that night, like, nothing crazy happened. You know, like, we were confined in my parents' basement, like, 13, 14-year-old kids. But, like, the next day, I remember telling my friends, I want to feel that way as much as I can. And I meant that. And like for me at that age, you know, I didn't become like a daily drinker. I didn't even start drinking every weekend. But, what happened was every opportunity I had to drink, I took it. From the very start, I drank for effect. You know, like I remember, and you know, I knew nothing about physical allergy, phenomenon of craving, but I knew that like, if there wasn't enough alcohol there to get me drunk, I would wait until more alcohol came to start drinking. Because I knew that if I started drinking but couldn't get drunk, that I would just be miserable. You know, that was from the start. Like, I can't, looking back, like, in my drinking career, like, there was never a time where I drank socially. Like, I really believe that I was just, like, alcoholic from the gate. And, you know, over the next year, like, you know, I just drank like as often as I could, but it was really when I was 15 years old that, you know, a lot more opportunities came and I started drinking alone. I started hiding alcohol in my bedroom. I started, you know, I like blacked out for the first time and I started paying some like consequences for it, you know, meaning, you know, my parents would catch me and like ground me or whatever. And, you know, and that happened a few times, and it was never, like, a real big deal, but this one, like, event happened that, like, I don't think I've ever shared my story without sharing this, because it was, like, a big turning point for a couple reasons, but when I was 15, my parents decided to read my diary one night, and, you know, I'm, like, this isn't an exaggeration, like, my life was centered around drinking, and, like, that diary was centered around drinking. Like, I had actually started the diary because I went from, like, this really super self-conscious, scared little girl who hated herself to having alcohol introduced to my life. And, like, even if I wasn't physically drunk, like, just knowing that alcohol existed, like, I felt like I held my head up higher in the world. you know, and I had that like big profound change, and I wanted to document it. My life like started to actually become like fun, and like I felt like, you know, I started to enjoy it like I did when I was a little kid. And like I just wanted to like document it, like write about it. It was like as simple as that. So my parents, they saw, you know, like this wasn't normal teenage drinking. Like, you know, they saw that like something was really wrong, and they sat me down. And my mom, like I'll never forget this. She looked me in my eyes and she said, "As long as you live in this house, you are never gonna drink." And I believed her. Like for me as a 15-year-old kid, I wasn't about to like go run away and run the streets of Philadelphia. Like I believed her, like even if it was just going to be like a 2-week period, you know, until like I got off punishment or whatever, like, and the thought of not being able to drink scared me so much that I made a plan to kill myself that night. Like I really went crazy, and I really like believe today that if I had access like to a gun in my home, like I might have actually like done it. Because what happened was I made the plan for the next morning. Like I was gonna, when my parents left for work, I was gonna go to this overpass on this highway and I was gonna jump. And like, thank God I made it for the next morning, because like sanity returned throughout the night and I didn't follow through with it. But I say that was a turning point for a couple reasons. One, after that, my relationship with my family changed entirely. You know, I became a stranger to my own immediate family. They no longer knew who my friends were, what I did when I left the house, that even things I probably didn't even have to lie about, I lied about, because I wasn't going to stop drinking. And my world was all about drinking, so I felt like I had to protect that. And two, like, and, you know, I'm going to keep it at a bottle, but, like, this is when other forms of alcohol were introduced into my life, and things that I preferred, things that for me got the job done quicker, you know, up until I was like physically addicted and in detox. But, and you know, and for me, like the progression was pretty quick. Like I went from, you know, a little girl to a junkie alcoholic in like a relatively short amount of time. And, you know, but still, like if you would have looked at my life on paper, like if you would have looked at my life on the outside, you probably wouldn't have seen much wrong. And like, I know today that's because of like, you know, the family I come from and, you know, like the hard work that they did. And because like I had, you know, I was going to school because my dad took that job. My parents taught me this really good work ethic. And also I had a habit to support. So like for me, I needed to work, you know, and I used to be like embarrassed to say this, but like I kind of have a little more insight into it now. And like I was still doing good in school. Like even at the worst of my alcoholism, like I did okay in school. And like I once heard a speaker, my friend Kathy, say that, you know, she would try to excel at things so because she feared other people's disappointment. And like that hit me in the heart. I was like, that was it. Like I feared. I was so worried about what other people would think, you know, so I would just try to excel at everything I did and then, you know, justify my alcoholism because I like got good grades or whatever. But, you know, but on the inside, like I was just so miserable. And, you know, it reached a point where like it just became a job. Like when I reached this part of my story, like I feel like I don't even really know what to say because it had just stopped working. Like, I wish I had, like, a more eloquent way to put it, but, like, you know, I once got that ease of comfort, and then, like, I was no longer getting that. And I would think it was a matter of, like, tolerance or, like, you know, well, if I just do more of this or if I just mix this with this, like, then I'll get that effect again. And it wouldn't happen. Like, I would drink until I was ending up in, like, the emergency room, and it wouldn't be enough. And what ended up happening was I got arrested. I had nodded off at the wheel in my car and got arrested for a DUI. And I ended up agreeing to go to this outpatient program. I really wasn't. My perception on this actually changes a lot. But I feel like what I remember the most about it was I wanted to stop hurting from alcoholism, but I wasn't willing to do anything. And I would go to meetings, you know, like most of the time drunk, because I couldn't imagine showing up to a place like this sober with other human beings. And I was going to the outpatient program, and I couldn't stop. And they ended up putting me in from like the outpatient that was three nights a week into the partial program because I couldn't stop, which is like 9 to 5 basically. It's like a full-time job. And I remember thinking like, well, this will work. You know, I'll be away from the neighborhood longer and, you know, I'll get more knowledge on my alcoholism. And the same thing happened like 2 weeks into that, or if that even, like I started drinking again. And then I ended up in the inpatient program. So like if you're familiar with the whole process of rehab, this was like completely backwards. And, you know, and it could be funny today, but at the time it was horrible. Like, 'cause this was all in like a month period. And, you know, I just remember like being on the fence. Like there were mornings where I would wake up and I would have this desire to stay sober and I would think, this is it. Like, I'm going to do this. And then like my mind would change like that, like without my consent. And it went on like that for a while. And, you know, halfway through the inpatient rehab, I guess I'd been separated from alcohol long enough to start to like get pretty serious. And I started to get like pretty like scared to drink again, basically. I didn't want to go back to how I was living. And, you know, the day I was discharged from inpatient, I cried because I was so scared. And, you know, and I made a 2 o'clock meeting, with my friend Maria, who actually just like passed away from this disease a couple of years ago. And, you know, then that night, so getting discharged, making the meeting, that night I went to my counselor because I was going to follow through with the aftercare plan of like doing the outpatient deal. And I remember telling her, like, things were different this time. I'm motivated. Like, I'm going to do this. I have the desire to stop. And I really believe that if I was like hooked up to a lie detector test, I would have passed. Like, I meant what I was telling her. And the very next day, 2 days out of rehab, I was drunk again, you know, and it wasn't even like, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about it. Like, basically, like, I had no mental defense, you know. It wasn't even like, oh, like, I want to go out and go drink. I was just like, I felt bored, you know, and I said, I want to go see what my friends in the neighborhood are doing. And the first house I show up at, they're drinking, and I had no mental defense. And, you know, within a few months, I'm physically addicted to alcohol, and I'm, like, worse than I'd ever been in my entire life. You know, I'd gotten fired from the first and only job I had ever had for stealing. You know, I was just, like, and then after that, like, my stealing from my family, which was, like, always happening, like, was just stepped up. And it just got really bad really quick. And I just, like, my world became so small. Like, I was no longer hanging out with friends. I was no longer doing anything. Like, I would just, like, wake up, drink, go to school, drink. Like, just, like, I had this whole routine throughout my day of, like, when I would drink and, like, what I would do. And it was just, like, horrible. And I'm leaving a lot out for sake of time, but within about a year period after I'd gotten discharged from that rehab, I tried to get physically sober maybe like 4 times, and I just couldn't do it. And what ended up happening, and it's like weird because, well, it's not weird. Like, I know it's God, but this wasn't even like the worst thing to ever happen in my alcoholism. But I ended up like totaling this car that I owned for like a few hours. And I remember standing next to this totaled car, because again, nodded off at the wheel of the car, and I was just out of, like, the police weren't involved, nobody was hurt, like, I don't even know how that happens, but I just remember, like, being out of ideas, like, out of lies, like, out of schemes, like, sorry, it's like a bug, I'm not crazy. Like, out of like the energy to like think of any lies or anything. Like, I was just like done. And I called up my parents and I told them everything because they didn't know. Like, you know, my parents, like, they're like, God bless them. They're like, they're pretty naive people, and they had no clue like what was going on with me. And I told them, and I said, you know what, next week after I take my finals, because it was finals week at school, which is like obviously more important. It's not, but I said next week after I take my finals, I'm going to check myself in a detox. And like, I don't know, like when people say things like that to me today, like I'm going to go into detox next week, I'm like, sure you are. But what ended up happening with me is like pretty crazy. I met my bartender for like the second to last time at Broad and Girard in North Philly, and he, well, now it's not North Philly, but then it was, but he ended up having to take me to my bank in the Northeast, which is like a 20-minute drive, and like I didn't plan on telling this guy that I was like thinking about getting sober. You know, I didn't think he'd want to hear that, or like that would be a good conversation for us to have. But somewhere in the conversation, this guy brought up that he was once a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that he had 5 years sober, and that when he was sober in NAA, his life was good. And you know what? Like, I got a glimmer of hope in that car ride that maybe life sober could be good. And like, listen, I'm not trying to say I'd never been told that before, because I have. You know, like I've been, like you heard my treatment center experience, and like I've been to meetings and I've been to counselors. Like people have told me that life sober could be good, but I just never believed it. You know, I never believed that that was like a possibility for me. And for me, like that was huge, like to have hope that I can be happy and sober at the same time. And like, believe me, I didn't come in here like fully like believing that, but like I just had this glimmer of hope and this little bit of willingness, and like that carried me a long way. And I ended up, they wouldn't fund me for rehab again, which I would have told you was like the worst thing to ever happen. But looking back in hindsight, it was probably the best, because of that, I agreed to go to a recovery house. And I went to this recovery house in the Frankfurt section of Philadelphia, and the mandatory meeting of that house was a group called the Northeast Club of AA. And I'd actually never been to AA before. I was going to another fellowship. And, you know, I started going to this meeting, and I, you know, there was a handful, there's a whole lot more now. Like the group now is like super enthusiastic. It's cool to see. But, at the time I got sober there, there was like a handful of people, who were sober, and it just seemed like the people who seemed genuinely happy were talking about the 12 steps in sponsorship. So like I, you know, that like became something that like I figured I should do. So I asked this woman to sponsor me, and she immediately like started taking me through the book. And I think at her very first time, or maybe like second time meeting up, first she had me read the doctor's opinion. And then like after I did that and we met up, we talked about steps 1, 2, and 3. And she said, you know, let's say this third step prayer together. And next week, and I'm going to have you come back, and we're going to start you on your fourth step. And like, I was willing to do it. Like, I was like, okay, I'm ready. And within that week, she ended up picking up a drink again. And like, and believe me, like, I have no like blame towards her at all. But like what was going on with me was, I was so scared, not so much of the fourth step, but of the fifth step. Like, I was so scared to be completely honest with another human being about who I was, that I really felt like there was going to be nobody else, like, on this planet that I was going to feel comfortable sharing that with. And, you know, so I ended up, like, not getting another sponsor right away. And I was still making meetings. I was still living in that recovery house. I was surrounded by people in recovery like 24 hours a day. You know, I was reading the literature. So like, I didn't think I was like in any danger. But what I ended up going on a weekend pass, and like, I had no plans of drinking. So you could probably see where this is going. Like, and early in the day, a thought popped into my head, and by the afternoon, it was an obsession. And for me, when I get an obsession, like, it's over. There's no calling anybody. There's no hitting a meeting. Like, you know, there's, like, I knew I was going to go drink. And I was actually, a part of me didn't want to, so much so that I was crying. Like, we were at a trolley stop. We were in Upper Darby, and we were going to head back into the city to go drink. And I was actually crying while waiting for the trolley, because I knew I was going to drink. And, you know, long story short, I ended up coming back to the recovery house the next day. Not because, like, I had plans of getting sober, but because I just, like, my plan was I was gonna, like, you know, like, leave there on a Tuesday because I had off from work, not tell anybody I'd relapsed. I was gonna call up my parents, tell them I graduated from the program because they probably would have believed me. And I was just gonna, like, go back home and continue to live how I was living. And what ended up happening was I still had the mandatory meetings to make between that Sunday that I had returned and that Tuesday. Because, like, I wasn't about to, like, I don't know, like, suddenly, like, not make the meetings and, like, make a big deal about things. I was like, all right, I'll do this. And, you know, I can't tell you, like, who, like, what the meeting was, what the topic was, none of that stuff, because I just didn't care. But I was at this one morning meeting, and this woman shared from the floor how she picked up over the weekend. And I was like, oh my God, like, I just picked up over the weekend. And, like, I don't know exactly what happened, but, like, I just, I knew, like, I had to give this a shot. Like, I knew I had to get honest that I just relapsed, and, like, I knew I, like, could not leave AA. Cause, like, I really believe, like, I'd be dead today if I did not get sober. And, you know, so I grabbed another sponsor, and I didn't wait. You know, I came in pretty young. I got sober when I was 20. And I used to think, like, I needed somebody who was my age, you know, or else, like, they wouldn't be able to relate to me or whatever. But, like, I just, like, that was kind of, like, beaten out of me. Like, I just grabbed a woman that I knew had experience with the steps and that I knew was taking other women through, and I asked her for help. And what she did was she threw me right into action. Like, she put me, like, basically, like, put me right on my four step and got my feet moving right away. And, you know, like, looking back in hindsight, like, that was huge for me, because for me, so, like, I was basically, like, I didn't have to go into a recovery house. Like, I just knew that if I went back to mom and dad's, like, as soon as boredom crept up, as soon as loneliness crept up, I was gonna run to the drink. So, like, I, like, chose to go to a recovery house. And to me, that is, like, any length. Like, if anybody's ever lived in a recovery house, like, that's, like, willingness, like, at its core. But, like, what happens is, like, I stop taking action. I start making decisions based on fear again. Like, basically my decision to not get another sponsor and do a fifth step because I'm scared of what they're going to think of me, you know? And, like, that willingness just, like, fades away. And, like, and 70 days sober, I drink again. Like, because for me, my tolerance for unhappiness and sobriety is, like, pretty low. Like, I can't deal unhappy sober. You know, and what I think, like, my sponsor knew was that, like, I was willing, and, like, she had to get me, like, while I was willing. She had to get my feet moving, like, while I was willing to do these things, or else, like, it was just gonna go away. Like, cause that is my experience. And, you know, and I was still really scared to do this. Like, I did my four step in a copy book, and I had a whole page ripped out and folded over and stuck in the back, because it was a whole page that I did not know if I was going to share with her. Like, up until I knocked on her door to do my fifth step, I did not know if I was going to talk to her about these things. But what happened was I prayed on the way over, you know, and I asked God for the willingness. And, like, it says repeatedly in our big book, like, if we don't have the willingness, we ask God until it comes. And, like, I'm here to tell you, like, that actually happens. Like, that has been my experience repeatedly throughout my sobriety, that if I ask for the willingness to do something, you know, and it doesn't always come like that or, like, exactly when I want it to, but it happens. And, you know, when we sat down to do my fifth step, I think it was the first thing that I talked about, you know, and like, you know, and for the first time in my life, you know, because that was the first four step I'd ever done, like, I saw the part that I played in things, and, like, that was huge. Like, when I first started speaking and told you guys about my parents, like, you know, the working two jobs and the sacrifice and the work ethic, when I first got sober, if you would have asked me about my family, I wouldn't have mentioned any of that. Like, first two names on my resentment list, mom and dad, like, so much anger, like, so much blame, and it was, like, ridiculous. And then when I got to the calm of, like, the part I played in it, like that, like in black and white in my own handwriting, like there was no denying it. You know, there was no denying it. And I had this like really powerful experience with the fourth and fifth step, with seeing that stuff. And like, you know, and like the good news is, like when I play a part in it, that means like I can change it, like with the help of a higher power. Like I'm not just like, you know, this victim in this world who like can't do anything about it, you know? And like I kept my feet moving with the steps, and I actually like I kind of wrote a really crappy initial eighth step list because I had a lot of like wrong and bad ideas about amends. Like I thought that like if I harmed somebody but like they didn't know it was me, that I didn't have to make amends for it. Like seriously, like I know it's like hilarious today, but at the time I really thought that. And like, and I'm aware that I have like a pretty innocent looking face, and like I use that to my absolute advantage, you know. So I thought, and like I really could be wrong about this. This could be like my skewed alcoholic perception, but I thought a lot of people didn't know that the harms I did, you know. Like I, like the job I was working at, like they had no clue that I was stealing from them for like 6 months consistently. Like they actually thought it was like somebody else who had already gotten fired for something else. But anyway, so like I wrote this crappy, like half-hearted eighth step, and I started to go out and make amends. And the first amends to my family was me. It was my 21st birthday, and it was me, my parents, and my brother out to dinner. It was like the first time we were all together in like a really long time. And I said, "I'm sorry for everything I did to you guys." And like that was it. And I was like, "Wow, that was, check that one off." And I remember it was like months later at my home group, and a friend of mine was talking about amends and like, you know, just like being free of the guilt and shame and all this. And I was like, wow, I'm not free of guilt and shame. Like, why? So I pulled him aside after the meeting, and he gave me different directions, because the sponsor I had at the time, I'm not blaming this on her, but like she ended up getting really sick with throat cancer, and like, I don't know, like it just, whatever, it became weird. But he gave me the direction to like go back to my parents, like go to them, or just anybody, like to, like to make the amends individually, you know, tell them the harms I did to them, things that they know about, things they don't know about, and ask, is there anything I could do to make it right? And like when I went back like to make amends, like with that direction, like I had a totally different experience. And like, you know, I know you guys could probably relate to this. Like, my family has heard "I'm sorry" a million times. Like, they don't want to hear that. Like, they want to hear me, like, being, like, honest about what I've done and, like, owning up to it and, like, asking what I can do to make it right. And, like, and I have an incredible relationship with my family today. You know, my brother, who once, you know, screamed at me, telling me I was tearing the family apart, 6 months ago asked me to be the godmother to his daughter, you know, like I was a part of his wedding, like in 2010, like these are things that like would not have happened if I had not been sober and in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, you know, my relationship with my family before I got sober was just like horrible, you know, and that's changed. And I actually, I didn't make, I think my hardest and most powerful amends experience I didn't make until I watched the sponsee make her hardest amends. You know, so that goes to show you like the power of working one-on-one with other alcoholics. Like I was sponsoring this girl who basically like ended up doing jail time because you know, she had like absconded and didn't see her PO, and I had to drive her down to Arlington, Virginia, and like whatever. But and like we were pretty naive. Like I remember thinking like they're not gonna keep her because she's like doing the right thing now. So just me and her took the drive, and then like the sheriffs brought her out in handcuffs. So I had like this like 3.5 hour long drive home by myself. But anyway, like I remember thinking like, how can I have a sponsee do jail time for their amends? And meanwhile, I couldn't make a financial amends to Friendly's restaurant because I was scared they were going to fire me. Like that was really it. Like, I don't know. Like I was 20, so I have like some pretty lame amends stories, but like I had worked there at like the worst of my alcoholism, And then when I had gotten sober, and like, you know, like I said, they didn't know that I was stealing, like, when I got sober, like, I told them, I was like, listen, like, I have a problem, I have to go to detox. And they let me, like, make my own schedule, and they were so good with me. And I remember thinking, like, I didn't even put it on my 8-step list, thinking, like, well, if I got fired, like, that would harm me, like, including myself in the, you know, like, when you're amends would harm others, like, category. And then I had that experience with the sponsee, and I started to pray for the willingness. And I ended up making that amends and going to my manager, money in hand, you know, because I wanted to, like, initially I was asking people, you know, for direction on what to do. And some people were like, well, you know, put the money in an envelope and don't write your name on it and slip it under the door. That way, like, the amends is made, the wreckage is cleared, but, like, you know, you don't have to, like, worry about getting fired. And then there's people who, like, somebody who's actually still a home group member in my home group today, who was like, oh, you know, it actually says we made direct amends to people. And he was like, you know, you go to your manager face to face and you give her back that money. And, like, by this point in my sobriety, you know, I had gotten, like, some God consciousness. Like, by this point in my sobriety, I was somewhat able to tell the difference between my head and my heart. And like, I knew, like, that direction fit in my heart. And, like, I'm not here to say that, like, if I made the amends anonymously, like, that I, like, would not be sober. But, like, I do know for a fact that making, like, if I did not make that amends, like, directly, like, I would not have had the powerful experience that I ended up having. Like, I, like, just had such a cool experience because it was one of the first times in my life that I was, like, completely honest about something and, like, actually, like, had the means to make it right, you know? And when I ended up leaving that job sometime later, like, I left with closure, you know? Like, and I left feeling like I was able to, like, become the employee that, like, I should have been the whole time. And, like, you know, and for me, that's, like, that's such an incredible experience. And, you know, when I look back in hindsight, it was around the time that I honestly tried to make amends that I feel like I had the biggest change in my life, you know, because when I first got sober, like, I didn't like Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I just felt like this was some place that I had to come. Like, you know, I felt like I tried everything else, like, you know, and I exhausted all my other efforts. But like, by the time I started making amends, like, I started to enjoy Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, by the time I was making amends, like, I started to feel like I had this purpose in life, and I started to feel happy, and I started to enjoy things, and I started to feel like all the pain that I had went through, like, all that stuff I'd gone through wasn't for nothing, that I could use that to help others. And, you know, and for me, and, like, I know this is not everybody's experience, but, like, my life got better pretty quick here. You know, when I had 90 days sober, I spoke at this group right on Kensington Ave. And it was the first time I ever spoke. And after the meeting, this kid pulled me aside and was like, you know, we don't really have much women sponsorship here. Can you keep coming back? And, like, if I wasn't in school or working or sleeping, like, I was at that clubhouse trying to be a service. Like, you know, whether it was, like, sponsorship or whatever, just, like, trying to be a service. And, like, I threw myself into Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, because I, you know, I didn't, like, you know, my sponsor didn't have to be like, all right, it's time to start helping others. Like, I couldn't wait to share this with other people. Like, I couldn't wait. Like, I went from, like, hating myself, like, being, like, super sad, wanting to die, to, like, enjoying life and experiencing, like, a happiness and joy that, like, I didn't even know was possible. You know, like, I didn't know how unhappy I was until I actually started feeling happy, if that makes any sense. You know, like, it was incredible. And like I did not do my first, God, I don't know, few years sober, like, I was not the best at 10 and 11. Like I kind of, like, threw myself into helping others and, like, got really wrapped up in that and, like, you know, started to forget about, like, my own side of the street and, like, even, like, you know, some of my amends and, like, improving my conscious contact with God. And, you know, and for me, like, I started to pay the prices with that. You know, I would be worried. I was getting resentments and fears, and I would think, well, I have some time sober now, and I'm sponsoring all these people. Like, I probably shouldn't be having these resentments and fears, so I'm not going to talk to anybody about them because, like, it's embarrassing. You know, like, but the book says when resentments and fears crop up, not if. Like, no matter, like, what else I'm doing in my sobriety, like, as long as I remain human, I'm going to get resentments and fears. And, like, what happens 9 times out of 10 is, like, I think I'm the only one who's experiencing that fear that nobody else is going to understand. And, like, the first person I call up to do a 10 step with, they're like, oh, yeah, I felt that way yesterday. Like, you know, like, all the time that happens, you know, and it's just, like, because when things stay up here, I could justify anything, you know, like, anything. Like, it's ridiculous. And I could get pretty sick. Like, even with 14 years sober, like, my head is still crazy, you know. Like, so I still have to do these things, like, just as much as I did 14 years ago. And with the 11th step, like, prayer was always kind of a big part of my sobriety. Like, I don't know exactly why I kind of, like, got into a routine of prayer and, like, never stopped. But I didn't give meditation an honest shot until I had about 8 years sober. And what happened was, I work for the city's child welfare agency. And at that time, like, I was a social worker. And I basically, like, had this really horrible case. And it was probably, like, one of the worst days of my entire life. And I remember calling up my sponsor, telling her about this scenario, and she was just like, I don't know what to say. You have to go to God. Like, you have to seek God in this, like, situation. Like, I have no clue what to say. And, you know, she directed me to pray and meditate. Like, not just pray and meditate. And, like, I think I didn't listen to her for, like, a week. And it reached a point where I was like, okay, like, I'm not going to call her again about this because she's just going to tell me to pray and meditate. So I ended up, like, giving meditation an honest shot. And, you know, and, like, I don't have this experience all the time, but I ended up having this really powerful experience where, like, my perception towards the situation changed. And, like, I don't know, it was just really cool. Like, where basically I was able to see where God was in probably one of the most ugliest situations I've ever seen in my entire life, you know. And, you know, and since then, like, I wish I could tell you I do it every single day, but I don't. But throughout my sobriety, I've gotten into consistent periods of prayer and meditation. And, like when I'm on my A game, like, it just, it feels really good. Like, I notice it. Like, I definitely notice it. Like, I bike to get around the city. And, like, if I'm praying and meditating, I am less likely to, like, yell at drivers and, like, flip out. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, that's a tangible, like, thing that I experience, like, with, as a result of prayer and meditation. Like, I'm just able to handle my emotional nature better, you know? Like things crop up and, like, I don't get crazy if I would otherwise, you know? And like, sponsorship's always been a huge part of my sobriety. It's always been very important to me, you know, to be a service in that area. And, like, I don't know, like, why I feel like I need to, like, talk about this, but the last woman I took through the steps actually recently, like overdosed and died while we were going through the steps. And, like, that, like, I'd never had that experience before. Like, you know, I'd had sponsees who died, like, later on, and, like, I don't know, like, people are dropping dead like crazy. And it's really, really scary. And, like, I feel very blessed that I'm here today. Like, I really mean that. Like, I think we're all, like, really lucky. I don't know, like, Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life. It has. Like, before I got sober, like, I remember getting sober and people would be like, well, what do you like to do for fun? I'm like, what? I don't know. Like, I drink. Like, that's it. And, like, since I've been sober, like, you know, my world has gotten so big, and, like, I've discovered that, like, there's things that I really like in this world, and, like, there's things that I'm really enthusiastic about, like, especially, like, I don't know, like, being in the outdoors and, like, stuff related to that, and, like, I don't know, like, I love it. And, like, I think if I was to sum up, like, what I struggle with today, it's just, like, not putting all those things before my primary purpose. You know, because it's easy for me to start thinking that, like, it's those great things in my life, like, the things, like, of this world, you know, that I love, that are the source of my joy and happiness. But, like, I know in my heart that if I did not do this, like, if I was not active in Alcoholics Anonymous, like, if I did not consistently attend meetings, if I didn't practice principles in my life, like, none of that other stuff would even matter. Like, even if I was still able to do those activities, like, I probably wouldn't even enjoy it. You know, like I know in my heart, like, this has to come first. And it's not like a life sentence today. Like, this is something I want to do. Like, I'm in a relationship with somebody who's not in Alcoholics Anonymous, and like, they say that they're jealous that I have this fellowship. Because like, it's, and if you think about it, it's cool. Like, the big book talks about it, like, fast friendships. Like, I'm able to meet somebody and like, have this instant connection and like, you know, be able to like, share like, this common thing. And like, not every place in the world has that. And, I don't know. I want to thank you. I feel like I'm running out of gas here. So I want to thank you guys for having me, and thanks. Thank you.